Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Dead or Alive by Ralph Cotton. Narrated by Mort Shelby. With performances by Michael Glenn, Ken Jackson, Timothy Lynch, Barbara Pinolini, Patrick Bussing, Tim Carlin, Alyssa Wilman, Thomas Keegan, Jeff Allen, James Lewis, Lily Beacon, Gregory Gorton, Thomas Penny, Terrence Aselford, Richard Rowan, Joel David Santner, James Konacek, Alexander Strange, David Coyne, Michael John Casey, Johan Detweiler, Scott McCormick, Gary Tells, Daniel Sontag, Drew Copus, Nick DePinto, Tracy Oliveira. Dead or Alive, Book 2, Devil's Due.
Omar flung himself from his wet saddle and slapped the spent horse on its rump.
Damn, Sullivan Hart!
Lloyd and Hand Crenshaw slid their stolen Appaloosa to a halt mid-trail and watched Mar's horse gallop away.
I mean it, boys. They ain't taking me alive. Not this time. I'll die first.
Mar ran from the trail into the cover of rock. A stolen, sawed-off shotgun in his hand. And Crenshaw turned in his wet saddle, staring into his brother's eyes.
He'd die first? He's lost his mind! We've got to make a run for it!
But Lord Crenshaw shook his head and jumped down from the Appaloosa.
No! We sided with him. When you side with a man, you don't run out on him. Come on!
But Lloyd, this horse has got plenty of run left in him. We can make it out of here.
There comes a time you've got to make a stand, Hand. If Ma's willing to die like a man, so are we.
Oh, damn it.
Hand jumped down from the mud-streaked Appaloosa and jerked it along behind him. This was neither the time nor the place to butt heads with the two deputies who'd been dogging him for the past 3 days. Their only weapons were Mar's stolen shotgun and the rusty pistol they'd found in the Appaloosa's saddlebags.
You both better think about this!
Hand joined them behind a stand of rock.
There's nothing more to think about!
Joe Mar smacked the horse's rump.
God almighty, Joe! What'd you do that for? Now we've got no choice but to give up.
Like hell we will. There comes a time you have to decide whether you'll crawl like a coward or die like a hero. I ain't spending one more lousy day in a stinking jail cell. What about you?
Lloyd Crenshaw nodded in firm agreement. The two of them turned their gaze to Hand.
Oh, hell. I reckon.
Good then. Now, let's have no more talk about giving up.
30 yards down the trail, Federal Deputy Sullivan Hart stood with his back against a tall jut of rock. Across the trail from him, his partner, 2-Jack Roth, ventured a look up along the trail, then ducked back behind the thick trunk of a cedar tree. Sullivan Hart watched the big Cherokee tracker adjust his wet hat.
Stay put, 2-Jack. They've about spent themselves. They're not going anywhere.
I know. I just wanted to look things over.
What did you see?
They let the horses go. I expect they'll be turning themselves in any time now.
Yeah, Joe Marr's no fighter. Neither are the Crenshaws. That was stupid, letting the horses go. Now they have to walk back to Fort Smith.
It was their decision. They'll just have to live with it. I'm ready when you are.
Hart slid down the tall rock.
Listen up, boys. You know how this works. Throw out your guns and walk down here with your hands raised. sooner we get this done, the sooner we'll get out of this storm and dry off. Joe? Lloyd? Hand? We're not gonna sit here all day. Throw out your guns and show yourselves. Let's go home.
We're not going back, Hart. You want us? Come and get us. You won't take us alive.
They can't be drunk, can they?
Not unless they found some liquor in their saddlebags. We're gonna have to do something, though. I'm not gonna lay here and get fried by lightning.
Joe! Quit acting a fool! Even with this jailbreak, you'll be out in 3-4 years at most. Don't make us kill you. I need you as a witness.
Nothing doing, Hart. We've made our stand. Come and get us.
Beside Joe Marr, Hand and Lloyd Crenshaw looked at one another, water running down their faces.
A witness? What's he talking about, Joe? A witness to what?
It's nothing. I can identify a man who killed his pa a while back. Without my testimony, Hart's got no solid proof against him.
Lord have mercy. You never told us nothing about it. You said you were in for cattle rustling.
It's not important. I told you I ain't going back.
But still, Joe, damn it to hell. You might have mentioned it before getting rid of our horse. Hart ain't about to kill you. But look at me in Hand here. We're dead sure as hell.
It slipped my mind, all right?
Slipped your mind? Why, you dirty son of a...
Lloyd caught his brother midair, holding him back as Joe Marr swung the shotgun around and leveled it at him. Lloyd Crenshaw pushed his brother back. The big rusty pistol in his other hand cocked and pointed at Joe Marr, 3 feet away.
And it's right, Joe. Damn you to hell. This whole jailbreak was your idea. We both whipped it out in 3 months. What in the blue living hell did you mean getting us into this?
Hart and Rob still hunkered down, quietly waiting to see how the drama would play out.
What was that all about?
It's me.
Boys, we're coming in. Either drop the guns or get to using them.
Joe Marr lay sprawled in the mud behind the cover of rock. His hands clasped the 2 bullet wounds in his chest. 6 feet away, the bodies of the Crenshaw brothers lay broken and bleeding, smoke still rising from Lloyd's chest. Hand lay face down, the rain beating his bloody back. Sullivan Hart stepped in from one side of the rock to Jack Roth from the other.
What happened here, Joe?
We had... disagreement. They just went nuts on me, Sully. I kept wanting us to give up, but they wouldn't hear of it. Lloyd run our horses off. Acted like they wanted to shoot it out with yous. I told them no, but you know how they...
You're lying, Marr. These boys would have been home in time for Christmas. Why would they want to do something this stupid?
Restless, I reckon. Sully, I'm sorry I got myself killed before testifying for you.
Take it easy, Joe. You'll make it. We'll get the bleeding to stop, then get you back to Fort Smith. And you're right about one thing, though. Gotta have you identify J.T. Priest. You might be my only hope. Why'd you do this, Joe? Told you I'd speak on your behalf. You would have gotten off with a year or less.
Hell, if I knew why I'd done things, I'd never been an outlaw in the first place.
That's no answer, Joe. Come on, let's get him out of this downpour and see what we can do for him.
Their boots slipping in the mud, they carried the wounded outlaw between them, back down the trail to where they'd tied their horses beneath a deep cliff overhang. Two Jack Roth shoved the horses to one side, clearing a place for Joe Marr on the ground. By evening, the storm had blown itself out and Joe Marr lay asleep with a wet saddle for a pillow and his chest wrapped in strips of cloth hard and torn from an old shirt he found in his saddlebags.
He looks bad. It'll be a miracle if he makes it back to Fort Smith.
He's gotta make it. Without his testimony, Judge Parker said there's a good chance J.T. Priest will go free.
The hanging judge is not about to let Priest off the hook.
But it goes further than Judge Parker. Parker's had a lot of his decisions reversed on appeal. Things aren't like they used to be. Can't just hang a murderer and be done with it anymore. We spend most of the summer tracking down the Los Pistoleros gang, still haven't caught all of them. If we lose J.T. Priest in court, we'll be starting all over again.
At least we've got them on the run now. We haven't heard a thing out of Cleveland Phelps since we shot it out with him and his boys at the Old English Spread. Mad Dog William Mabry has dropped out of sight. If we have to start all over again, we'll do it. This time, we'll know more about what we're dealing with.
Yeah. Parker says Los Pistoleros is an example of how crime's gonna be in the future. Says by the turn of the century, there'll be more banks robbed by businessmen with pencils than there will be by outlaws carrying guns. Says if you expect to bring a killer to justice, you best shoot him down yourself or else his lawyer will be keeping him alive after you're dead of old age.
Parker's got some strange ideas about the future. Let's hope he's wrong. The day we start shooting men down without a trial is the day we might as well take off the badge and become gunmen ourselves. It pays better.
Law's a real tricky thing. Parker says it's all based on public opinion. When he came out here, this territory was so wild, all the public wanted to hear was how many men he had sent to the gallows. Now that it's settled down some, all they talk about is how ruthless his methods are.
Speaking of tricky things, shouldn't we be seeing Quick Charlie Sims roll into Fort Smith any day now?
Yeah, Parker said Sims headed here from Chicago over a week ago.
He probably got his foot caught in a poker game in St. Louis and couldn't shake it loose. Now that his bank robbery charge has dropped, there's no telling when we'll see Quick Charlie again.
Yeah, I figure he'll show up sooner or later. He seemed real anxious to get to Fort Smith last time we talked to him. He was convinced J.T. Priest would try to bust out of jail.
Well, Sims was also convinced that Mad Dog Mabry would come gunning for him in Chicago. So that's two things Sims was wrong about. As far as I'm concerned, I'd just as soon work with the devil as work with Sims again.
Be careful what you ask for. Sims could probably arrange it.
Yeah, I don't trust him, but I've got to give him his due. Sims manages to stay a few steps ahead of every game. Wherever he's at right now, he's not sleeping on a blanket.
That's a sure bet. Wherever he's at, I'm sure he's not in any strain.
Quick Charlie Sims looked across the table at the barrel of a Cock Derringer pistol in the tight fist of Dirk LeMaster. There'd been some serious cheating going on in this game. LeMaster had been dealing crooked all night, ever since the train pulled out of the St. Louis rail station. Quick Charlie Sims had only started cheating an hour or so ago, once he saw that LeMaster wasn't going to let up until he'd broken everybody in the game.
You heard me, Simpson. I'm calling you a lousy card cheat.
And right you are, LeMaster. I was wondering just how clumsy I'd have to get before a fool like you would notice it.
LeMaster was taken aback by Sims' words, as were the other four faces around the table, except for C.B. Harrington.
You're right about him cheating, LeMaster. But he's cheating because I paid him to.
What is this?
Easy, gentlemen. His name is not Simpson. It's Charlie Sims. Perhaps you've heard of him?
What? Charlie Sims? You mean Quick Charlie Sims? Well, it makes no difference who he is. He's been cheating and I got every right to kill him.
I couldn't agree more, LeMaster. When a man cheats at cards, he deserves to be shot. Wouldn't you agree, Louisville Ike Woodson?
As Sims spoke, his left hand suddenly came up beside the man sitting beside him. Now another Derringer was in the game, this one in Sims' hand, cocked and pointing into Woodson's ear. The man beside him froze, his half-lens spectacles lying low across the bridge of his long nose.
I don't know what you're talking about, sir. I'm not Louisville Ike. My name is Morris, Jack Morris. I'm from Nashville, Tennessee.
Sims kept the pistol in the man's ear.
You and I have a couple of things in common, LeMaster. We've both been cheating in this game, and we're both ready to kill a card cheat. You're ready to kill me, and I'm ready to kill your partner.
Partner? Sir, I swear to you, I'm Jack Morris. I've never seen Mr. LeMaster before in my...
Shut up, Louisville Ike. Difference between us, LeMaster, is that my Derringer has two shots in it. Yours isn't loaded.
You're out of your mind, Sims.
Oh? Well, then pull the trigger. course, when that hammer drops on an empty chamber, I'll put one bullet through Louisville Ike and the next one through you. Yep, I unloaded it for you a while ago. Remember when the train swayed? I fell against you on my way back out to relieve myself, then I fell against you again on my way back.
No, you didn't do that, Sims. Nobody's that slick. You're bluffing.
Suit yourself, then. Pull the trigger. Let's see who wins this hand.
Jesus, Dirk! Don't let him kill me here!
Shut up, Ike! All right, you smooth son of a bitch, I'm calling your bluff. Any last words?
Quick Charlie Sims only sat there staring, calm, cool, and silent.
I mean it, Sims. Here it goes.
For God's sakes, Dirk!
Dirk LeMaster clenched his teeth, his gun hand so tense that it started to tremble.
Oh, damn you, Sims.
Then, his pistol hand slumped to the table, and he let the cocked derringer spill from it as if it weighed a ton. With his own derringer still pressed into Louisville Ike's ear, Sims reached his free hand out and picked up the master's pistol.
Bad call, LeMaster. No wonder you have to cheat at this game.
Oh, you dirty son of a...
Dirk LeMaster leapt to the coat rack on the wall where his .45 caliber Colt stood in its holster, hanging from a peg.
Oh, hell!
Players, except for Sims and C.B. Harrington, scattered from the table. LeMaster spun with the big Colt.
You!
Then he slumped with the empty gun hanging loose in his hand, watching Sims turn his cocked derringer toward him.
Forgot to mention, I really did unload your Colt. Start running, LeMaster. You too, Louisville Ike, but leave those half-lens spectacles behind. We'll call them a keepsake.
After LeMaster and Louisville Ike had scurried out the door, Sims uncocked his derringer, tossed it over to C.B. Harrington, and stood up, straightening his vest.
Now then, gentlemen, Mr. Harrington has been keeping count on the losses. What say we take back our shares and get down to some real poker playing?
C.B. Harrington had broken Sims' derringer open in his hand.
What? My goodness, Sims, this thing isn't loaded either.
Oh, that. Well, what can I say? I always seem to work better under pressure. Besides, those little pistols are dangerous. Imagine if one happened to go off in your trouser pocket. Ouch!
But, I mean, that is... You just...
There was never any danger. Oh, let's face it, gentlemen. If they understood the finer aspects of playing the game, they wouldn't have been cheating in the first place.
Near daylight, after the game had broken up, Quick Charlie Sims and C.B. Harrington stood on the rear deck of the private Pullman car.
I have to say, Mr. Sims, I can't recall a more stirring game. You certainly brought something to the table. I've been bursting to ask you how they were cheating and why you chose such a dramatic way to expose them.
The main thing I wanted was for them to admit they were partners, because that's something hard to prove. While they never admitted it, it became obvious at the end. Now the word will go out. They won't find themselves welcome in any game of this quality.
Yeah, but how were they doing it?
Louisville Ike's half-lens spectacles. I noticed that after every new deal, he'd push these up on his nose and cock his head both left and right, studying his hand. Then he'd lower them and go on with the game.
And... he was somehow signaling LeMaster?
No, Ike was showing LeMaster what the players on either side of him had. Me on his right and the elderly Caldwell gentleman on his left. When Ike raised his nose and cocked his head just so, the overhead lamp caught the reflections of the cards from his spectacles like a mirror.
Oh, my goodness. I would never have guessed it.
Because you were busy watching your game. I was paid to watch theirs.
Well, good show, sir. But that must have been awfully difficult for LeMaster, only seeing those tiny reflections, and for only a moment at that.
Very difficult. They were so busy cheating, all I had to do was palm a few discards, build a low hand for them to see, and then play my better cards after they thought they knew what I had. started driving them crazy after a while, but what could they say? Finally, I started palming cards so slowly, LeMaster figured he could expose me on it, get me thrown out of the game, and go back to business as usual.
Well, I have to admit, I feel a bit foolish being taken so easily.
Nah, you shouldn't, sir. You're used to playing a gentleman's game in honest surroundings. These two are just a couple of sharks who slipped into your pond. Can happen to anyone.
Well, kind of you to say so. Speaking of one's game and knowing how to play it, I have something to tell you that I think you'll find very interesting. I heard through the grapevine that you were involved in that nasty shooting incident in Chicago a few weeks back. The one between those two federal deputies and some hired gunmen working for J.T. Priest and William Mabry.
He cocked a brow at Sims, hoping for some acknowledgement. But Sims offered no change in his expression, giving C.B. Harrington his flat gambler stare.
Oh, come now, Mr. Sims. Don't make this a one-sided conversation. I assure you, this is in the utmost confidence. There are things I need to tell you about a particular gang called Los Pistoleros. But I can only do so in an air of openness and trust.
All right. But first, tell me what you know about the shootout in Chicago.
My. But you are the cautious one.
I'm listening.
In a nutshell, you escaped from Deputy Sullivan Hart and took up with J.T. Priest. Hart was on Priest's trail because Priest killed his father. Deputy Hart caught up with you and Priest in the Chicago rail yard. Somehow you changed sides, took up with Hart and his partner, and the three of you shot it out with a bunch of Priest's gunmen. Am I right so far?
Go on.
You took a bullet in the back, and Priest ended up in Judge Parker's jail. But word has it that before the shooting started, you managed to trick Priest into signing his shares of Midwest Investment over to you. So now you're a major shareholder of a powerful corporation, one that happens to have strong ties to Los Pistoleros, the biggest secret society of killers and criminals in the country. J.T. Priest and William Mabry ran the gang. Now Priest is in jail, and nobody seems to know where Mabry is. I've even heard rumors you might have killed him.
Not bad. You kept your ear to the ground. So, assuming any of this is true, what's your interest in it?
Purely financial. I want to buy that stock from you. It's no secret Judge Parker's deputies are out to put an end to Los Pistoleros. Once they're out of the picture, I want control of Midwest Investment. With my business expertise, I can do something with it. Something you could never do. The best thing you can do is sell to me, make yourself a sizable amount of money, and forget about it.
So you're making a legal offer?
Yes. That's what I prefer doing. But knowing the way you took possession of the stock in the first place, I'm determined to get it by whatever means necessary. Name your price, Sims. Money is not an object. Let's be gentlemen about this.
Sorry. It's not for sale. I always wondered how it'd feel to own part of a big business. I think I'll hold on to the stock. See what it goes up to over a few years' time.
I was afraid you'd say something like that.
Harrington stepped to one side, raised a hand, and knocked on the side of the Pullman car. Sim saw a large silhouette standing in the darkened doorway, a pistol raised and pointed at him from 6 feet away.
Mr. Sims, meet my newest employee, Arch Radner. Folks call him Steelhead. You don't even want to hear why. Steelhead has a way of making people listen to reason. Believe me, it's best you give me a price and see if we can't reach an agreement. This is the part of doing business you don't have a knack for.
Maybe not, but I learn something more about business every day. No wonder you have a reputation for always getting your way. So what happens now if I turn you down? Steelhead here kills me? Well, that won't get you anything.
Kill you? Of course not. One reason I've hired Steelhead is that he's assured me he can inflict an awful amount of pain without actually killing someone. I'm sure most people would come to their senses before things get that far. Steelhead enjoys his work and goes about it in an extraordinary way. He likes to start at a person's little finger with a pair of wire cutters and work his way over to their thumb. Care to see him at work?
The tall, broad figure stepped out of the doorway.
So, the whole thing about the card cheats was just your way of getting me out here alone. No witnesses.
Don't feel foolish, Sims. Even the best of us can be tricked. To use your own words, you were so busy watching your own game, well, you never saw this coming.
I have to admit, you're good, Harrington. I fell for it, hook, line, and sinker. Looks like you win. But tell me this, just how big is Midwest Investment that you go this far to own it?
Oh, come now, Sims, you'll only hate yourself if I tell you. Let's march back inside. I have some ownership papers already drawn up. All I need is your signature, while you've still got all your fingers to sign it.
Uh-uh, Harrington. You got me. You win. But I gotta know what it is I'm losing. Either tell me and we finish this thing on a peaceable note, or I'll go down kicking and screaming right here. I got a right to know, don't you think?
Let me have him, boss. I was watching everything in there. I hate a slick turd like you.
Now wait, Arch. All right. Since you've given in so easily, it's gonna break your heart, but I'll tell you just how big Midwest Investment is.
Harrington took out a folded leaf of paper from inside his coat pocket.
In the Northwest, they own Brakefield Mining and Logging. In Texas and California, they own Danford and Moore International Shipping. In South Africa, they own 3 diamond mines. See? I told you it would only break your heart. Now, come on, Sims. Let's go.
All that, and Priest and Mowbray were still running Los Pistoleros? Ha! Still out robbing banks, running guns to the Mexican Federates, shooting and killing people. Why?
I'll tell you why. Because they were always outlaws at heart. Because no matter how much money Priest and Mowbray had, they could never get enough. Because they needed large amounts of unaccounted cash to buy politicians in Washington. It shouldn't surprise you, Sims, that most great fortunes have a certain element of corruption to them. It's the American way.
And now you'll be doing the same thing, I suppose.
No, Sims. Like I told you, I'll run the business and forget the outlawry. That day is dead and gone. Instead of robbing one bank with a gun and getting away on horseback, I prefer robbing a lot of banks, all at once, legally, with accountants and attorneys from 1,000 miles away. That, too, is the American way. Only more sophisticated, and hopefully, less bloody.
I'm glad we agree on the less bloody part. How do you know I won't come back at you later?
Well, I'll just have to take my chances, won't I? Now, I suggest we go get settled up with one another. Unless, of course, you have any more questions for me.
Nope. That's about all I wanted to know. You've been a big help, Harrington.
Sims didn't move toward the door. Instead, he turned to Steelhead Radnor.
Don't get alarmed, Mr. Steelhead, but that cold metal you're about to feel on the back of your neck is my partner holding a cocked pistol on you. Since we're all being gentlemen here, I'm going to ask you just once to lower your gun.
Nice. Nice try, Sims. I have to admit, you are a remarkable gamesman. You never give up. Only this time, I'm afraid you've met your match.
Oh, Mr. Harrington. There really is something cold against the back of my neck.
You better believe there is, but it won't be cold for long if you don't lower that pistol, you son of a bitch.
Oops.
Charlie stepped forward, snatched the pistol from Steelhead's lowered hand, then stepped back and leveled it on C.B. Harrington.
Well, I'm sure you remember my friend, Kate McCorkle. You met her earlier in the evening. I can't stress strongly enough what a volatile temper she has, especially towards someone who meant to kill me.
Jesus, Sims, wait a minute. We weren't gonna kill you. You have my word as a gentleman. This was only business. I only meant to persuade you.
As Harrington spoke, Sims stepped in and took the folded leaf of paper from his coat pocket.
So this has all the locations of Midwest Investment Company's holdings?
Yes, most of them. Don't kill me, Sims. Take the list. Keep it. But don't kill me. I was only trying to...
Shut up, Harrington.
Kate shoved Radnor forward with her pistol barrel.
Put a bullet in him, Charlie. He brought it all on himself.
Easy, Kate. She does have a point, you know. But I have to admit, Harrington, if it hadn't been for this list, it could have taken me months just to find out what I own. Since you know so much about Los Pistoleros, where would a person manage to find most of the gang together in one spot?
If we tell you, you promise not to shoot us?
You have my word.
Arch here used to ride with them. He said most of them are up north somewhere. Right, Arch? Oh, for God's sake, Steelhead, tell him! I'll pay you extra for it!
All right, it's true. Cleveland Phelps is in charge. He's put the word out everywhere. Anybody who's part of Los Pistoleros is meeting up north in the territory.
Where in the territory?
At Cold Ridge, a mining town up along the Columbia near the border. Los Pistoleros owns the whole town, mines and all. They even got their own sheriff running things for them. He's an ex-stock detective named Harris Sweet.
I've heard of Sweet. He did his share of killing in Kansas years back.
That's one.
Tell me about it.
What can I tell you about him?
Think of something.
Well, Sweet's an old, mean, crazy sumbitch. He don't get along with nobody. Except a big, one-eyed cat he calls Scratch.
Oh? A cat?
Don't ask me why. Sweet used to feed him whole chickens at a time. He'll sick that damn hellion on a fella, too. I've seen him do it. But, you got other problems besides Sweet. Cleveland Phelps is offering a $500 reward for anybody who kills you or those two deputies, Judge Parker's. If the three of you's smart, you clear out this country and change the names.
What about you, Mr. Steelhead? Were you gonna claim a reward after killing me?
No. I work strictly for Mr. Harrington. I was gonna kill you, but it wasn't for no reward.
Hey, shut up, Arch. That's all we can tell you. Now let us go. We'll forget this whole ugly incident ever happened.
Beneath them, the train swayed into a curve, lowering its speed.
Sorry, Harrington. It's not that easy.
But you gave your word, Sims.
I said I wouldn't shoot you.
Well then, what are you gonna do?
Get off the train.
Jump? From a moving train?
The master in Louisville Ike did. I count to three. One.
You can't be serious. In the dark, we don't know what's out there. We could be passing all over water or over a canyon, for God's sakes.
Life is just one big gamble, Harrington. Two.
Okay, Sims, we're going.
Harrington and Radnor turned, facing the rush of wind, trying to steady themselves on wobbly legs.
You better hope you never see me again. I'm not the kind of man you could treat this way.
Three.
Sims pointed his pistol in the air. For a moment, Sims and Kate McCorkle stood in silence. Then Kate lowered her pistol.
Think they rolled away okay?
Sure, I waited till the train slowed down.
Sims uncocked the pistol in his hand, unloaded it, threw it out into the wind.
Kate, you worry me sometimes. You were about to shoot those two, weren't you?
Oh, most definitely.
See? Even though I told you earlier not to do it unless I gave you a signal. It throws my timing off, Kate. I'm wondering whether or not you're going to play the game the way I set it up.
But it all worked out. Anyway, we were right about this card game being a setup. You took a big chance going along with it.
Not as much as you'd think.
What is that supposed to mean?
No, nothing, Kate. I needed to hear what he knew about Los Pistoleros and Midwest Investments, that's all. How else could I have found out?
Charlie, why don't we clear out? Forget about Sullivan Hard, Two Jack Roth, and Judge Parker. Let them handle this their way. You don't owe them anything. We can go wherever we want to.
Now, Kate, you know I can't leave until my business with J.T. Priest is settled once and for all. Besides, what would Hart and Roth do without us there, cheering them on?
Don't make jokes, Charlie. I'm afraid of Los Pistoleros. I know what they can do. They're dangerous killers, Charlie. There's too many of them. Look at that big monster Steelhead Radnor and all the things Harrington said he would do.
Oh, Radnor was no problem. I can handle them, Kate.
Handle them? How? You don't even like carrying a gun.
But I will carry one if it'll make you feel better, Kate. I'll carry a big Colt on my hip and another one up under my arm. I'll carry a sawed-off shotgun, a Bowie knife, a pair of brass knuckles, and a club. There, will that do it?
Stop it, Charlie. I'm serious. This is a large and dangerous gang.
Okay. I'll bring in a gang of my own.
Don't make jokes about this. We're together now. I want us to stay this way.
We will, Kate. You'll see. I'm getting all my chickens in a row. When everything's right, I'll start plucking them. Now quit worrying and let's go inside. We have C.B. Harrington's private Pullman car to ourselves now. All the way to Fort Smith in the morning. Be ashamed to let all this go to waste.
J.T. Priest stood at the bars of his cell. The dimmed glow of a single lantern came to a halt outside his cell. And Priest squinted for a second, then looked into the guard's eyes.
2 hours, Priest. Be ready.
2 hours? Tony, are you sure about this? I mean, this is cutting it awfully close after those three escaping the other night.
This is the perfect time. While the deputies are out chasing Joe Marr and the Crenshaw brothers, we go in 2 hours, Priest. Unless you'd rather call off the whole deal.
No, Tony. Forget I mentioned it. I'll be ready. Just make sure everything's all set. I don't want any slip-ups.
Sergeant of the Guards Martin Tooney looked J.T. Priest up and down.
There won't be any slip-ups unless you make them. Don't forget, I'm going with you. Part of the deal is you getting me into Los Pistoleros. Think I'm gonna let something like this go wrong?
Don't worry, Tooney. You get me out of here, you are a member of Los Pistoleros.
Then relax and let me handle this. Just be ready in 2 hours when I come back for you.
Don't worry. I'll be ready.
Priest had been ready ever since he'd arrived. Now, as far as bringing this jail guard into Los Pistoleros, well, he'd have to wait and see. The truth was, J.T. Priest wasn't even sure where he himself stood with the gang. He hadn't heard a word from his partner, William Mawbry, since he'd been here. Wasn't sure if Mad Dog Mawbry was dead or alive. One thing was for certain, Priest was still the leader of the gang, and as soon as he busted out of this joint, he'd pull Los Pistoleros back together. Priest had made a couple of wrong moves, but nothing that couldn't be corrected once he was on the outside. His first mistake had been killing Federal Deputy Coleman Hart and slicing off his ears, not realizing that Coleman's son, Sullivan Hart, was also a federal deputy, and that Sullivan and his partner, the big Cherokee Two Jack Roth, would track him down. Well, that problem would be solved. He'd have them both killed. Priest's biggest problem was that he'd allowed himself to be taken in by Quick Charlie Sims. Sims had forced him to sign over his interest in Midwest Investment, the corporation that was the backbone of the whole Los Pistoleros criminal empire. Without his shares in Midwest Investment, J.T. Priest was no better than any other outlaw with a gun and a fast horse. He'd worked too hard for too long to go back to the life of a common thief. There was a bloody reckoning coming between him and Quick Charlie Sims. And this time, J.T. Priest would take back what was his. When 2 hours had passed, Priest eagerly stood at the bars of his cell. Tooney pitched a uniform against Priest's chest.
Hurry up, put this on.
Priest didn't question him. He stepped into the trousers without bothering to first remove his grimy striped prison trousers.
Stay behind me when we get to the main door. I'll do the talking. Keep your face down. Nothing happens unless we get through the main doors. Do you understand?
I understand.
Tooney dimmed the lantern and walked out of the cell and along the stone corridor, J.T. Priest staying close behind him. At the end of the corridor, they passed through the first iron door and walked slowly and calmly toward the main iron doors. At the main doors, Tooney reached out and banged his fist on the iron plate covering a 6-inch peephole.
Guards coming out!
Tooney saw the guard's eyes go to Priest and look him up and down. Priest kept his face turned away from the guard, but Tooney knew it would only be a second before Vertrees saw something was wrong. He let Vertrees take a step closer, then Tooney swung a powerful arm around his throat from behind, then lifted him up on the hilt of the dagger.
There now, you little peckerwood. I always told you this was a dangerous job. Let's go, Priest.
Oh, yes. We're gonna get along just fine, you and me.
Beyond the last door lay the backyard of the courthouse, cloaked in darkness. Priest moved along quickly behind Tooney in a crouch, both of them looking back and forth in the darkness. At the rear of the yard, they moved into the darker shadow of the small livery barn and stood there with their backs pressed against the wall.
Keep watch. I'll get some horses.
It's already taken care of.
Tooney pulled Priest forward, then coaxed him farther into the darkness toward an alley at the rear of the yard.
Hurry up.
What about more guards?
There's only one more. He's taken care of, too.
A few feet farther along, Priest saw the body of a guard lying face down at the base of a tall maple tree. Inside the mouth of the dark alley, they stopped and pressed their backs to the rough boards of a rickety shed.
What gives, Tooney? Where's our way out of here?
Right there.
Tooney gestured at the four riders who stepped their horses forward from around the corner of another shed and moved toward him. The front rider led two horses by their reins. Tooney stepped forward, took the two sets of reins, and pitched one set to Priest.
Say hello to some friends of yours, JT.
Denver Stanton, is that you?
Yep, it's me. Cleveland Feltz sent me and the boys. Told us to do whatever it takes to get you out of jail. Well, you coming, JT?
You're damn right I'm coming. Who else is here? Bobby McCrady, is that you?
It's me. Me, Earl, and Carl White. Now, are we going or what?
They pressed the horses hard for a full hour nonstop, until finally Stanton brought the group to a halt atop a hillside and stepped down from his saddle.
Rest your horses, boys.
The men stepped down and stretched.
We got nothing to worry about until the changing of the guards. It'll be another hour before anybody knows we're missing.
You do good work, Tooney.
Yeah, he does. I told him I'd put him in Los Pistoleros for doing this.
Well, that's funny. I told him the same thing.
Let's get something straight, Stanton. Cleveland Phelps might have hired you to get me out of jail. But now that I'm out, I'm still the top dog in this bunch. Don't anybody here forget that.
Yeah, ease up, JT. Cleveland Phelps asked us to get you out, so we did. Now, whatever problems you and Phelps have is none of our business. All I know is, somebody better get to running things before Los Pistoleros goes out of business.
Make no mistake about it, boys. I'm back, and you're gonna see some changes. Nobody's heard a word from William Marbury since he went to Chicago. I figure he's either dead or he's run out on us. Either way, I'm drawing my best men close around me. That means you boys, if you all want a piece of the action.
Now you're talking, JT. Me and the boys have been working for Los Pistoleros off and on for the past 3 years. It's about time somebody took notice of us. Phelps only hired us to get you out of jail. But if you're saying you need us to back your play full time, you've got yourself some gunmen.
That's exactly what I'm saying. As soon as we get up into the high country, I'm doubling whatever Cleveland Phelps agreed to pay you for getting me out. If Phelps has any problem with it, well, he'll have to take it up with me. Any questions?
Nope. You're the boss, JT. If you're going to run this gang the way it should be run, you can count on us.
What about you, Tooney? Are you going to have any problems working for me? If you are, we'll pay you off and you can leave right now.
I'll work for whoever's bold enough to take what he wants without asking anybody a damn thing. Looks like that's you, JT. so count me in.
Then what the hell are we waiting for? Let's ride!
The next morning, Judge Parker was in his chamber at his desk and on his second pot of strong coffee when Deputy Dan'l Slater brought Quick Charlie Sims to see him.
I suppose Deputy Slater told you what happened.
Yes, he told me. May I have a cup?
Help yourself. I suppose Slater also told you that Deputies Hart and Roth are also out hunting for Joe Ma and the Crenshaw brothers. That means I don't have any experienced deputies to put on Priest's trail, for the time being, anyway.
Slater filled me in on everything. Said a guard named Tooney helped Priest escape.
Tooney got his job through a political connection. Some congressman from Maryland. That's the third time I've gotten stung hiring someone as a political favor. But enough of that. I want to thank you for helping capture Priest in Chicago. You took a bullet in the back trying to help my deputies. That was highly commendable.
You're welcome. Though it all seems a little immaterial now. How long before Hart and Roth will be on Priest's trail?
Soon, I hope. They've been gone over a week. The moment they arrive, I'll send them out. I've sent telegrams out in all directions, advising local authorities to keep a lookout for Priest and Tooney. But I doubt if they'll be showing themselves.
No idea which way they're headed?
No. You can't pick up tracks in a town this busy. Once Roth gets out in the open range, maybe he'll get a lead on them.
I have an idea where Priest is headed.
Oh? Hart told me you had a feeling Priest would try to escape. But what makes you think you know where he's headed?
Something I heard on the train coming here. I met a gentleman named C.B. Harrington. He and his hired hand, an ape named Steelhead Radner, seemed real familiar with the Midwest investment in Los Pistoleros. Radner told me about a place up in the Northwest, a mining town called Cold Ridge. They said Los Pistoleros always head up there when things get a little too hot for them.
I heard of C.B. Harrington. A big business lord from New York. Where is he in this Steelhead Radner? I'd like to speak to them at once.
Sorry, Your Honor. They, both got off the train unexpectedly. If they make it here, I imagine you'll be hearing from them soon enough. Some crazy accusation about me stealing his Pullman car. But I think what they told me was true.
You stole his Pullman car?
Well, he'll say I did. But it's nothing, Judge. He's just one more sore loser trying to stay in the game. The Steelhead Radner says he's ridden with some of the gang in the past.
Should I arrest Harrington and this ape? Hold them here for safekeeping?
Nah, they're no problem. Harrington's just bargain hunting. Can't blame a man for that. As far as Radner, he's just one of many thugs. I got a feeling Harrington only has him along because Radner can introduce him to the others without Harrington getting his head shot off.
See, that's the trouble with this gang. Every hard case in the country rides with them at some time or the other. They're more like a secret society than a bunch of outlaws.
They're hard to catch, I'll give them that. But if it'll help you any, Your Honor, I'd be glad to head northwest. Well, I already have my game in play. Might save your deputy some time and trouble.
And if Priest is there, what will you do? I'm told you don't even carry a gun.
Well, that's not quite so, Your Honor. I don't like carrying a gun, but if need be, I will. The main thing is, if Priest is in Cold Ridge, maybe I can hold things down until Hart and Roth get there. If things go the way I plan, I'll take J.T. Priest into custody and bring him back. You'll need Hart and Roth to take down the rest of the gang.
Oh, you'll take Priest into custody. Just like that.
Well, not just like that. Priest and I have some unfinished business. Then I'll deliver him to you personally.
I think you've lost your mind. But why are you offering, Sims? What's your angle in all this?
Angle? Well, what about just civic duty, Your Honor?
Uh-huh. I don't buy it, Sims. I know you went after Priest the last time because he framed you for the bank robbery up in Creed. But that charge against you is dropped now. Why are you still so interested in Priest and Los Pistoleros?
All right, Judge, I'll be honest with you.
When I was a small child, my folks were killed crossing the desert to California. A band of traveling Roma found me, took me in, and raised me as if I was their own.
Gypsies? You were raised by gypsies?
Yes, Your Honor. Years later, while I was seeking my fortune at the gaming tables in New Orleans, that band of Roma made the mistake of stopping for a few days on land owned by William Mad Dog Mabry. Mabry and some of his gunmen killed them all. Men, women, children alike. He killed them and left their bodies and wagons to rot out in the Badlands. Now the next day he must have got worried. So he sent his top gunman, Tuck Javin, to clean things up for him.
I remember that name. Javin was a killer, but I heard he died years ago.
Not so, Your Honor. Tuck Javin, you see, is J.T. Priest. Once he and Mabry started Los Pistoleros and channeled their robbery money into starting Midwest Investment Corporation, they both wanted to look respectable. Mabry's still trying to drop the nickname Mad Dog, and Tuck Javin changed his name altogether.
Oh, that's quite a story, Sims, if it's true.
It's true. Mabry sent Priest out to clean up and bury the bodies and get rid of the wagons. But instead, Priest piled the bodies into their wagons and drove all four wagons into a large cave. The wagons and bodies have been there ever since. William Mabry told me all of this in Chicago. Told me he had it done, but he had no idea where the cave is. Only Priest knows that, and that is something I need to find out.
But why? If they've been dead this many years, why not let them rest in peace?
It's a Roma custom, Your Honor. When a Roma dies, all the possessions, wagon and all, are burnt. It's up to me to set this thing right.
Then why didn't you just ask Priest why you had him captured in Chicago? What did he have to lose by telling you?
If you understood the Roma, Your Honor, you'd know why I can't ask him. To be honest, I knew Priest had escaped your jail. I'd hoped to be there when he did. My plan was to make him take me to that cave so I could finish what I have to do.
You mean to take him there and kill him, don't you?
No. I won't kill him if I can keep from it. Mabry's the one who killed my people. Priest only did the cleanup work.
And William Mabry. That's why no one has heard from him. He didn't just disappear to avoid prosecution. You killed him, didn't you? An eye for an eye, as it were.
Let's put it this way, Judge Parker. I'd be very surprised if you ever see William Mad Dog Mabry again. Other than that, I won't comment.
So, your interest in all this is strictly personal?
Yes, strictly personal.
I see. Okay, Sims. Suppose I send you up to Cold Ridge ahead of Hart and Roth. Can you control your revenge and keep them there until my deputies arrive?
Your Honor, I don't even call it revenge. It's just something I have to do. Let me remind you, Your Honor, I don't have to ask anybody's permission to go to Cold Ridge. I'm only asking you out of respect, sir. I prefer going there with your blessing, just to keep Hart and Roth from showing up there wondering whose side I'm on.
Good thinking, Sims. Especially since Sullivan Hart seems convinced that you're in cahoots with the devil himself.
Yeah, Sullivan Hart and Two Jack Roth are fine lawmen. We just got off on the wrong foot, what with me stealing Hart's horse. But believe me, I wouldn't attempt this without them on my side.
They might be upset if you really do succeed in capturing J.T. Priest before they do.
They can have the rest of the gang all to themselves, Your Honor. That is a promise.
You'll be working for me without Los Pistoleros knowing it. Consider yourself deputized, Sims. All they will know is that there is bad blood between you and J.T. Priest. I see unlimited possibilities to what a man like you could do in this situation.
My thoughts exactly, Your Honor.
After his meeting with Judge Parker, Charlie went back to the hotel room he was sharing with Kate. He had just broken the news that she would not be joining him on his journey to Cold Ridge.
I didn't come this far to be left in Fort Smith like excess baggage. If I'm not going, neither are you.
Kate swung the big Colt up from the nightstand beside the bed, taking both hands to hold it steady.
What are you saying? You'll kill me just to keep me from going?
Don't be ridiculous. You of all people should know I'm hard to bluff.
Oh no, I won't kill you, but I'll put a bullet through your foot. That should keep you here for the next week or so. Meanwhile, I'll go to Cold Ridge and take on JT Priest and Los Pistoleros on my own. I mean it, Charlie, don't try me.
Kate, dear Kate.
Sims took a step toward her.
We both know that this is something best done by...
Oh! I'll do better this time.
Jesus, Kate, this is the very reason I want you to stay here. You got a terrible temper. I know you don't realize it, but it's true. There is no telling when you are apt to fly off the...
Don't tell me about my temper. I don't want to hear it. All I want to hear from you is, Kate, be sure and pack something warm. It gets cold where we're going.
Kate, be sure and pack something warm. It gets cold where we're going.
JT Priest sat atop his horse in the early morning light, looking down on the wagon-rutted main dirt street of Summit.
Listen up, gentlemen. It's been a long time since I've sacked the town, but you can bet your shirt I haven't forgotten how. We're not only gonna rob the bank, we're gonna seize the entire town.
Lifting a big pistol from his waist, he gestured toward a row of telegraph poles running up alongside the trail.
Earl, you and Carl get up there and cut those wires. Is that gonna be a problem, boys?
No, sir, JT. No problem at all.
White kicked his horse forward. Earl Mellon fell in behind him.
As soon as we rob this bunch of hayseeds, I'm headed to the Mercantile, getting myself some decent clothes and boots. Then I'm getting a nice hot bath while the rest of you get acquainted with the women folk. Whatever Cleveland Phelps has going up north will just have to wait a few days. We might as well kick up our heels a little on the way.
On the way down the dusty trail, Earl Mellon and Carl White trotted their horses back in and joined them.
It's done!
At the beginning of the dirt street, they stopped, six abreast. At the edge of town, Priest nodded toward a sign that read, Town Ordinance Number 110 prohibits the carrying of firearms within town limits.
I love it. I believe every town should have such an ordinance.
Out front of the blacksmith's barn, a man stepped forward wearing a badge on his vest. Carl White leveled his rifle.
There's the bank, boys! Skin her down!
Bobby Crady and Carl White jumped off their horses, up onto the boardwalk and through the open doors of the bank. Earl Mellon hurried into the bank on foot.
You and Tony keep everybody pinned down out here. I better make sure there's enough money to go around.
Priest urged his horse forward onto the boardwalk and through the doors. Inside the bank, Priest straightened up in his saddle as soon as he cleared the door frame.
How's it going, Bobby?
Bobby Crady and the other two stood inside an open vault, stuffing money into their saddlebags.
Oh, Lord have mercy, JT. There's too much money here. We can't get it all.
We got all day if need be. Why don't you go get some burlap bags from the Mercantile? We're not leaving a red cent behind.
What the hell is a two-bit town like Summit doing with this kind of money on hand?
Why don't you just show up here next council meeting and ask them, Carl?
See, boys? There's some people who promise big money. But I don't just promise. I deliver.
Outside, three townsmen had armed themselves with shotguns and came running down the middle of the street.
Damn fools.
I think I'm gonna like this kind of work.
It's all what you get used to, I reckon.
You people, listen up! We're gonna spend a little time here getting to know you. If there's any whores in town, they better get on out here and make themselves known. If not, we'll go door to door and pick who we want. Makes us no difference.
Just then, Carl White ran from the bank with a pistol in his hand.
Where you going, Carl?
JT said get some bags. You ain't seen so much money in your whole life.
Is that a fact?
Well, I'll be damned. Maybe old JT's the man to pay attention to after all.
Does this mean Cleveland Phelps ain't gonna be running things after all?
Hell, who knows? Who cares? I say we let Phelps and JT work that out between themselves. Main thing is, we did our part. We're full-time Los Pistoleros now. That's a good thing to be, no matter how you slice it.
By evening, a fire raged in the middle of the dirt street, where broken furniture from the bank had been dragged out, piled high, then lit with a dose of kerosene. JT Priest stood at the fire in his new suit and knee-high riding boots. A crisp, white straw skimmer hat cocked at a jaunty angle on his forehead.
I think we've about worn out our welcome here, gentlemen. By now, somebody's wondering why there's no telegrams getting through to here.
Yep, you're right. All right, you heard the boss.
Reaching out with his boot, Stanton nudged Carl White, who lay sprawled on a feather mattress in the dirt. A naked woman lay passed out beside him, flat on her back, her flaming red hair slung sideways across her face.
Get up, Carl, before you wind up married.
Come on, boys, let's go. We didn't come here to settle down and raise families. Move it!
Priest looked around at the gunmen gathering like lost souls from some distant netherworld.
Anybody who doesn't want to live like this all the time, best clear out now and not ride with me. Who else has ever treated you this good, huh?
You got my vote if you ever run for office, JT.
Tooney's new shirt front was stretched wide with his share of the bank money stuffed inside it.
I'm glad you all feel that way. Because there's another jerkwater town just like this 80 miles up the trail. We'll do the same thing all the way up north. That is, if you don't mind upsetting Cleveland Phelps with us being a little late.
To hell with Phelps.
That's what I thought.
Outside the town, Stanton sidled his horse up closer to JT Priest.
I know a couple of old boys living over on the flats not far from here. Luther Eisen and his son Bert. What do you think?
About what?
About them joining us. Bert's what you might call a little touched in the head. But his daddy, Luther, meaner than a snake. He's rode off and on with the James Youngers ever since the war. I know he'd fit right in with Los Pistoleros, especially if this is the way things are going to be going. Luther likes it wild and woolly.
How far?
30, 40 miles maybe.
Think he's got anybody besides his idiot son with him?
You never know, he might have. Luther's always got three or four gunmen hanging around.
Point the way, then. We're always looking for a few good men.
Quick Charlie Sims and Kate McCorkle were 3 days out of Fort Smith by the time Sullivan Hart and Two Jack arrived with Joe Marr, lying low in his saddle. They'd stopped at a missionary doctor's clinic in the Indian Nation and spent a full day there getting Marr's wound attended. Marr looked bad, his chest the color of fruit gone to spoil. As soon as they turned Marr over to the young doctor at the jail hospital ward, they went straight to Judge Parker's chamber in the courthouse upstairs. Deputy Daniel Slater met him at the door to the judge's chambers, a shotgun cradled in his arm.
Fellas, walk a little wide of the jailbreak matter. Parker's fit to be tied over it.
I don't blame him. So are we. This place is getting worse every day. One of the orderlies said a guard was responsible for JT Priest getting away.
Not just a guard. This was Tooney, sergeant of the night watch. Parker's ready to strangle him with his bare hands if he's ever caught.
There's no point in us rounding them in if all they gotta do is walk away.
Parker's not talking like he wants Tooney rounded in, if you know what I mean.
We know what you mean. Take us in to see the judge, Dan'l. I imagine he'll want us on Priest's trail right away.
Yep, but let me warn you guys before you go in there. Parker sent Quick Charlie Sims out looking for Priest. Him and his woman left here 3 days ago by rail, heading northwest.
Sims? Sims is no lawman.
But don't blame me, boys. I'm just telling you what I know. Sims told the judge he knew where Priest was headed. Parker sent him on.
Inside the judge's chambers, Hart walked to Parker's desk with his battered Stetson hanging from his hand. Roth followed a step behind him.
I can see by the look on your faces that you've heard what's going on here. Before you say something you'll regret, sit down and take a breather.
We're fine.
I said sit down. I've got enough on my mind. Don't come in here with a bad attitude. First things first, did you bring in the prisoners?
Only Joe Marr, Your Honor. Things got out of hand. Him and the Crenshaws shot it out with one another. Marr's down in the infirmary. He's touch and go with a chest wound. Doctor gives him a 50-50 chance.
The Crenshaws would have been out of here in no time, the fools. Too bad about Ma. He's not a bad sort. He just can't keep his hands off other men's cattle.
What about Quick Charlie Sims and his woman, Your Honor? Where do those two swindlers play into this?
Calm down, Two Jack. Apparently, Sims met a man on the train who says he knows Los Pistoleros is gathering up in the northwest, near the border.
Met on the train, Your Honor? Sims had to have made that up, sir. How are we supposed to work with him and that woman? They're both slippery as eels in a bucket.
Let me finish, deputy. At the time, I had no deputies to send out. Maybe Sims' information is good, maybe it isn't, but it costs us nothing to find out. He let me know I had no hold on him if he wanted to go, but I deputized him. At least this way, maybe we'll have some idea what he's up to. If Cleveland Phelps or any of those pistoleros are up there, we'll know where to look for Priest. You two will be on the trail anyway. If it leads northwest, so be it. If not, Sims will let us know. It can save you some time either way. Besides, Sims holds both of you in high regard. I think he wants to cooperate with us. I know this sounds crazy, but Sims thinks he can arrest J.T. Priest and bring him back to jail. Says he needs you two to bust up the rest of Los Pistoleros. You have to give Sims credit. He's not afraid to play his hand.
They'll kill him.
Sims doesn't stand a chance, Your Honor. He's no lawman. He's just gotten too full of himself.
Give him a chance. I have no idea what you should expect to be waiting for you up there. I'm certain to catch fire and brimstone from Washington for even sending you. The only reason I'm doing this is out of respect for your father. If you'd rather I turn this matter over to another district, just say so.
No, Your Honor, we'll handle it. Who was this man Sims supposedly met, if you don't mind me asking?
It was two men, actually. One was a businessman by the name of Harrington. The other was his hired hand, a big fella by the name of Radnor. Sims said Radnor used to ride with some of Los Pistoleros. Said Radnor often goes by the name Steelhead. I dare not wonder why.
Steelhead Radnor. That name sounds familiar.
I once heard of a seaman called Radnor who could break boards with his forehead. He learned it in Shanghai from some Oriental wrestlers. They say he could kill a man just by butting heads with him.
Well, at any rate, that's all I can tell you. I doubt very much if you'll run into those two. It sounded as if Sims might have thrown him off a moving train.
Why?
To keep Kate McCorkle from shooting them would be my guess, based on Sims' sketchy details. Charlie Sims has a way of never giving you the complete picture. I get the impression he does so in case he may need to alter his story at some future time.
And this is who we're supposed to work with? I hope we can round in Priest and his bunch without Sims' help. I'd like to keep him, his woman, this Harrington, and his steelhead friend out of it. Things just seem to happen any time Sims is involved. I want to keep this whole thing simple, if that's at all possible.